on Pan-Africanism and the need for African people and all of humanity to organize. That was recorded at the Law and Disorder Conference, which was held at Portland State University in May. Stay tuned now for Air Cascadia. Before that, we have this one announcement.
Hey everybody, elections are coming up for the KABU Board of Directors. Right now we're looking for board candidates with skills in finance, new media, and nonprofit development. So if this sounds like you or someone you know, you can download a copy of the board candidate package at kboo.fm or pick up a copy at the station during business hours. We're at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The application deadline is midnight June 30th, so don't delay. And thank you for supporting Community Radio, KABU.
KBOO Portland.
Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, June 18th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. First, a few headlines. We're going to be speaking a little later on in the program with our guest, Kevin Zies. Zies is an organizer with Popular Resistance, and you can go to popularresistance.org to find out more about this project. It's a primary endeavor that Kevin is involved with right now. He is an attorney, a political act, and a political activist working on peace, economic justice, criminal law reform, and reviving American democracy. You can follow him. His Twitter is at KBZESE, and find out more about what Kevin is up to these days. He's as an attorney, we're going to be talking a little bit about what is going on now in Iraq and Iran, and the U.S. once again plotting in creating not just a mess, but what is potentially an illegal mess in this case. Obama indeed does not have the authority to go to war without congressional authorization. So what they do is, we spoke with Ray McGovern yesterday, we won't call it war, we're going to call it something else. It'll sort of like in Vietnam when we sent in all those advisors and wound up getting 50,000 people killed. So first, though, we've got just a very few headlines. You were invited to the second annual Resistance Ecology Conference coming up in Portland. That's June 27th through the 29th, and more on that later on as we get closer up to those dates. Further afield, Portland's police union president, in a message to union members, slammed the city's effort to try for independent investigations into officer misconduct. The Independent Police Review Division is specifically what the police union doesn't like. Officer Daryl Turner contends that civilian investigators in the division, get this, wait for it, trampling on his union members' rights and performing, once again, biased, inadequate, and flawed investigations. Oh, really? Well, at least somebody's trying to investigate what the police are up to. The Portland Police Union is ironclad. Nothing gets in, nothing gets out, and it protects its own, no matter what it takes. in every case. It's never about justice. It is never about what really happened. It's always about your word against theirs. And some sort of investigation is indeed called for, and as soon as possible. As far as trampling on his union members' rights, wait a second. The police are supposed to serve the community, not terrorize it. Trampling on their rights? Wait a minute. Many people that are listening right now have been actually physically trampled on by members of the Portland Police Union. And the U.S. and Canada have increased their oil extraction production as resistance to oil pipelines becomes more effective. The use of trains to transport oil has skyrocketed, leaving communities vulnerable to explosions, oil spills, and unmonitored oil train air emissions. At least 8 oil train explosions have occurred in the last year alone, killing innocent railside residents and polluting the environment. There are more and more stories and more silence is less and less being talked about in the mainstream media about this issue as the dangers proliferate down the line. 4 U.S.-based organizations with programs centered in El Salvador were set to deliver a petition to the U.S. State Department on June 6th with the signatures of over 1,000 U.S. citizens opposing what the groups call the intrusion of the U.S. embassy in the sovereign politics of El Salvador. The issue was an indication by the U.S. Ambassador Mari Carmen Aponte that the U.S. may withhold nearly $300 million slated for the second phase of the Millennium Challenge Corporation aid program. If they're going to withhold nearly $300 million, if the Salvadoran Agricultural Ministry continues its current practice, buying seeds from small-scale Salvadoran producers for its family agriculture plan, the deal is the blackmail here is that they're not getting the money unless they buy Roundup Ready seeds from Monsanto. Okay, we've reached further afield, and now it's time to talk with Kevin Zeese about the situation unfolding in Iraq and the role that other countries in the region around the Iraq's neighbors are being confronted with, how the balance of power shifts. Good morning or good afternoon, Kevin. Thanks for being with us today.
Good afternoon.
Well, we're delighted to welcome you back to the KBOO airwaves. All this week we've been talking about this issue. It's flat out illegal, if I understand correctly. You have a piece, I think it was in Truth Out, on yeah. Hawks are pushed for Iraq war. This was on the 14th. Things are moving very fast right now. The Hawks may be pushing for war, for another Iraq war, but this is not even legal. And how it's not even not bloody likely at this point that Congress would sign off on it, even if it were legal. We're going to be working closely, I suppose, with Iran, which many people saw coming a mile away. Can you talk a little bit about some of the legal issues here?
Well, it's both legal and practical. I mean, the legal issues in attacking Iraq is that the Constitution gives the power to go to war to the Congress, not to the President. And so the Congress has to take some kind of action to authorize the use of military force. Some people are arguing that the current authorization that was given back in the Bush era provides sufficient legal grounds for a U.S. attack. I think that's, if anyone reads that authorization, they can see that's false. And you can see the article you mentioned on both Truth Out, Popular Resistance, as well as on the Green Shadow Cabinet pages. So, we should also not ignore the UN, the international law. I mean, attacking another country is the most severe violation of international law that can exist. And there's only two ways that such a attack can be authorized internationally. One is if the country has attacked itself and is defending itself, and second is if the United Nations approves, a military attack. So I don't see either one of those likely to happen, and so we'll be violating international law if we do anything along those lines. The other issue is, go ahead.
No, please continue. Please continue.
The other issue is practical. I mean, the group that we're focused on here. Is one that's not a normal military. They don't sleep in barracks. They don't have any fort bases that they're inhabiting. They mix in with the civilians, and they, you know, rarely march in any kind of way that makes them easy to attack. So any kind of air attack or drone attack will end up killing more civilians, including an enemy, and that will just feed the insurgency and create more opposition to the United States.
So, what the reason behind this this fiasco that people were so fed up with Nouri al-Maliki's regime that they more or less rolled over when ISIS started marching on town after town towards Baghdad. Getting rid of Maliki is not an option, or perhaps it is. And that's one question. The other question that I have is any of this... I find it not possible to believe that the powers that be, people in the State Department, the people in think tanks, did not see this coming. And they must have seen this. They must have seen it. ISIS has been around for a while now, and they've created havoc in Syria. But why did powers like the U.S. and Great Britain until this moment? It seems they had to have thought that this was a good somehow going to work out. I don't understand.
Well, I mean, first off, even though we spend an awful lot of money on intelligence and we do dragnet surveillance of everyone in the United States and many people around the world, don't underestimate how incompetent intelligence services can be. I wouldn't assume that they saw this coming. We can't just make that assumption. It's amazing how much the United States foreign policy makes mistakes. You just look at Benghazi. I mean, how poorly equipped they were to defend themselves in a very hostile area when the CIA was using that embassy to conduct a war. I mean, they should have expected an attack there too, but they didn't seem prepared for it. So I wouldn't assume the U.S. knew. And second, it's not clear, who the powers are behind this. I mean, there's a lot of suspicion that Saudi Arabia is behind this. That's a very close ally in the United States. So it would be very bizarre if the United States now to ally with Iran against Saudi Arabia and ISIS. That would be just a very strange mix of alliances. In fact, this, some people see this issue really as a fight between Iran and Saudi Arabia for domination of the region. So are we going to side with Iran against one of our closest allies, Saudi Arabia? It just seems so strange. This is a mess, and this is a mess that was very predictable. As many have seen, you go back to the early quotations from when this war began, this was one of the predicted outcomes, the civil war, more anti-Americanism, more insurgency, more extremism, and more division between Shiites and Sunnis. In fact, it seems almost like the U.S. policy was designed to add to those divisions. Prior to the U.S. going into Iraq, it was a secular country. There were mixed neighborhoods, mixed families, Shiites and Sunnis in both. And after the U.S. got in there, we started to focus on who's Sunni, who's Shiite. I mean, so we created an incredible division that were, it'd be like if a foreign country came to the United States and occupied us and then started creating divisions between whites and blacks and Jews and Chinese. I mean, the divisions are there, but they're not at the level that we see now in Iraq, and they weren't at the level that they were in Iraq before the U.S. invasion. So this is all predictable, and the U.S. should really stay out of it. We should let the region decide it, particularly let Iraqis decide it. We've made this mess, and putting the bull back in the China shop is not going to make the China shop any better.
Yeah, final thoughts on this, just to wrap this up, speaking about Obama, it does not indeed have the authority to go to war without congressional authorization in any case. If they don't go in, and Obama loses nothing if they don't go, he's not up for election again. So it's not domestic politics driving the decision making. Thank God, but we very likely will find ourselves. Is there any working with our only possible ally in the region, Iran? And covertly, I suppose, although Saudi Arabia is not much of an ally, how the balance of power in the region, this is definitely, has shifted everything. We have all these various people who were, Bashar al-Assad, and again, and you know, Saddam Hussein in Iraq and Gaddafi and Libya, all these people were billed as brutal dictators, and yet we had secular states then. You did not have these kind of civil war scenarios unfolding. How, going forward, would we be able to work with Iran? Do you see any potential there?
Well, we should have been working with Iran years ago. Even during the George Bush era, there were efforts by Iran to reach out to the United States, and the United States kind of slapped the hand and then talked to them. Since the most recent election in Iran, we've seen some openings. And we hope that continues. I don't think we should be working with them in the way John Kerry's advocating, which is working with them as a joint military force to attack ISIS. That would be a terrible way for us to develop an alliance with Iran. We should be developing an alliance on non-military issues and resolving differences between us. And I really would like to see, I hope, that Saudi Arabia and Iran start talking to each other rather than dividing up the country with military power to see who can get the balance of power. They need to talk about how to live in the region together and create a situation where Shia and Sunni aren't at each other's throats. But that's up to them. It shouldn't be up to us.
Kevin, thank you so much for that. We're all fresh out of time. I want to thank you so much for joining us. My guest has been Kevin Zeese. Thanks again for that. This has been KDR4 for Wednesday, June 18th, 2014. Kate Welch engineered the show today. Thanks for that, Kate. Kathleen Stevenson's the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Flashpoints. We continue our drumbeat coverage of the expanding fighting in Iraq. Also, peace activists will gather on Saturday around the country to oppose further U.S. involvement in the war over there. And we will rebroadcast excerpts of a powerful forum recorded recently in San Francisco on the battle against Israeli apartheid rule in Palestine. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned.